The Guardian.
Hi, everybody. So, yeah, as you guessed, we finished recording, and then another Premier League manager is sacked, as is tradition. I'm joined live now by the future Mrs. Rushton, which is bad news for Bob Uppercutt, but good news for some other people on the Twitter. Jay,
this... Yes, hello. Hello, listeners.
This guy's been sacked here, this one.
Ronald Koeman.
And rumoured to replace him.
Sean Clyde, David Moyes, David Unsworth, Thomas Tuchel and Carlo Angercholi.
Who do you think should get it?
Choli.
Anyway, there you go. Enjoy the pod. We don't talk about Ronald Koeman, but we will do...
Talk about Uppercutt.
But we will do on Thursday. Enjoy the pod. Take it easy. Hello, everybody. This is Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League Spurs start to worry that they'll have to leave Wembley at the end of the season as they sweep Liverpool aside in a bad day for Dejan Lovren. Bad day for Lindelof in Huddersfield as Manchester United lost their first game of the season. Managers on the brink. Koeman's Everton ship 5, while West Ham capitulate at home to Brighton. They're both still in charge while I say this. They almost certainly won't be when you hear this. Elsewhere, muscly Michael Appleton gets a win for Leicester. And your Bufal, Sofian, scores a brilliant goal in arguably one of the worst football matches of all time. We'll speak to Sid in Spain, get the latest from Europe, your questions, feedback corner, and that'll be today's Guardian Football Weekly. Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent news. Priya Ramesh, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good stuff. Philippe Auclair, nice to see you.
Very nice to see you too, Max.
Okay, you've had no breakfast, Philippe?
Nope.
But you're okay.
Yes.
Okay. And you had leftovers for dinner, much like the channeling your inner Lars Sivertsen.
For breakfast, Priya. Yeah.
Yes, for breakfast you did. All right, let's crack on then. Wembley, Spurs 4, Liverpool 1. More seems to be made of Liverpool's shortcomings rather than Spurs' attacking threat. You were there, Philippe. Would you agree with that? The story is more about Liverpool not being very good rather than Spurs being good.
The story is twofold. The story is twofold. Just depends, a bit like Rashomon, depends which point of view you want to take at the beginning to tell it. I'd rather be positive because I got so much flack for talking about Liverpool last night on Twitter. Tottenham were absolutely magnificent. And what I think is one of the most impressive things, I mean, the so-called curse, we can forget about it, is the fact that we don't seem to notice anymore the fact that there are actually players missing from this Spurs squad. The fact that Pochettino is able to organise his team differently almost at every game. Like you had Serge Aurier at left back, for example. You would imagine you don't have Danny Rose, you don't have Ben Davies. Well, two of the best exponents of that position in England, if not in Europe. And you put Serge Aurier, has a very good game. I mean, he's against Mo Salah, so he's going to have his moments like everybody else. And nobody seems to notice anymore that you've got Son working with Kane, works beautifully. You've got Dele Alli working in a... perhaps a more withdrawn position that, as is usual, works a treat. You've got Harry Winks on the field and not Eric Dier. And you think, hello, we thought that this squad was a little bit thin to be at the top in the league and in the Champions League. And the week they've had is absolutely, magnificent. So I think perhaps we should be positive and emphasise how magnificent the work of Mauricio Pochettino with this very special group of players has been.
If you were Gareth...
With a special mention for Hugo Lloris, who is, at the moment, I think, the very best keeper on the planet.
Actually, you make that point. I did wonder. Lloris made that brilliant save from Coutinho. At the other end, Mignolet isn't perfect for... And Lloris might have been at fault for Liverpool's goal. He could have come out, potentially. But if you look
I disagree with that.
Okay.
In fact, it's because of a slight hesitation in the Tottenham defence, the line of defence. If he comes out, actually, he does a Mignolet, if you see what I mean. It's basically, there's a little bit of a problem. And anyway, let's just give credit to Salah for being so quick and actually a very, very cute little finish.
I wondered if Mignolet, if Lloris would have potentially saved Son's goal and Ali's volley.
Yeah.
Also on the Liverpool goal, credit to Henderson for the ball. That was really good through ball for Salah.
Yeah. So
it made it really hard for Lloris, which is why, you have this conversation about should he have come out, should he have stayed on his line. But it was really well played ball into the area where it does force the keeper to make that decision. And I think credit to him,
And that's the sort of pass that Jordan Henderson can't make
exactly,
in an England shirt.
It's the thing that you'd expect someone like Kevin De Bruyne to play. But, you know, it's full credit to him. And it was, you know, one of the very few bright spots for Liverpool yesterday.
Anish says, can you lay into Klopp for a bit? I reckon he's getting an easy ride from the press. Barry, do you want to give him an easy ride? Or do you want to lay into him? Or
I don't want to particularly lay into him. I saw the way he sort of hung his players out to dry yesterday was a bit mean-spirited, particularly Dejan Lovren. You know, blaming the players like that or saying you could do better than them, it's a dangerous road to go down for a manager, I think. But the fact of the matter is Dejan Lovren did put in one of the worst performances I've ever seen from a Premier League player.
Is there any mitigation in the fact that he is taking, by all accounts, all manner of painkillers to get on the pitch?
There's a lot of mitigation. That is certainly part of it, the fact that he's playing in immense pain, by all accounts. Also, the fact that I don't think he's afforded enough protection by the players in front of him. Jordan Henderson.
Also the fact that Joe Gomez is playing Kane, is it? Onside, and that Lovren is playing the offside trap correctly, and no.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
there's absolutely no question he had a stinker, but there's a lot of blame to go around in that team. I think Simon Mignolet didn't play particularly well either, and the question was more about Klopp. Certainly, you know, Liverpool, they're not in a terrible shape, but their defensive shortcomings are well documented. You know, when Lovren went off the pitch, they still conceded another two goals. They conceded five against Manchester City. He wasn't playing, so, you know, it would certainly be unfair to lay all the blame at his door. Jurgen Klopp, I don't think he's in any danger of losing his job, but there have been murmurings for a while of discontent, and they're a team that are very good going forward, not good at the back. That was sort of shown in extremis yesterday, and but I don't think it's any big revelation.
See, the thing that I have is, so Conte calls himself a tailor because, you know, he works with what he has and he tailors his side to fit the strengths and weaknesses they have. So if Klopp knows that Liverpool's defenders aren't very good, he knows Lovren isn't the best, you know, Lovren and Matip aren't the best defensive partnership. I think as a coach, it's your responsibility to then set your team up in a way that you don't expose individual weaknesses. So you work as a structure, as a unit, to then hide or shroud the weaknesses of individuals as much as possible.
And but they hadn't conceded that many. They'd actually had quite a good record going into this game.
But if you look at, like, I mean,
apart from being the side that's conceded more goals away from home.
They've got what is strange, bizarre, almost unexplainable, even though there is an explanation, is the fact that at home they've got one of the best defences, only conceded one, conceded 15 away from home, three per game. So that tells you that when they don't have this kind of, when they're not like sharks in a feeding frenzy going forward and basically cowering other teams into not attacking because they're just too worried about counter-attack at Anfield, when they can't do that, they haven't got much of a leg to stand on.
And, I mean, I know there's, you know, some scepticism about this, but if you look at their expected goals against, Tottenham play pressing, both play pressing styles. But if you look at Liverpool, they concede a lot more shots of a lot better quality in central areas, in areas where on another day someone might score instead of hitting the bar or, you know, going off target. So the more you concede those types of shots, the more likely at some point the luck is going to change and you're going to start conceding them instead of getting away with it.
I don't know if anyone else pointed this out, but for the fourth goal, Jan Vertonghen's first touch is absolutely glorious before that volley, and it was kind of lost in the fact that it was saved. And then I don't know if anyone saw Vertonghen when Kane scored, basically being like, seriously, like, I totally deserve that goal. You know, Kane's running off and Vertonghen's head in his hands going, this is ridiculous, which is a nice place to be, I suppose, when you go 4-1 up.
Max, can I just add one thing for Jurgen Klopp? Because I was in the TV interview zone after the game, as well as in the press conference. And I was listening to what Klopp had to say. I can understand that a player is having such a bad game that you have to withdraw him, even though he's a centre-back and even though it's only the 31st minute. You can sort of understand it up to a point. I think it's really a very fine line there. What I think is totally unacceptable is the way that it was presented to the media afterwards. And I think it was unacceptable. There was not a word. I mean, he said things like, I could have taken any other out of? Well, no, you didn't. You took out this guy who has been the scapegoat for Liverpool fans for a very long time, who's had absolutely awful things said about him on the social networks. You pick him. You take him out. Afterwards, instead of saying I could have saved that goal if I had been with my slippers, almost something like that, what you do say is that you hadn't realised that this player perhaps was not in the right frame of mind or physically fit. It was my responsibility. I shouldn't have put him on the pitch. My apologies to Dejan that I had to take him off. That would be what a classy manager who perhaps didn't think about his own stature and what people think of him and the image he's projecting of himself, which is what Klopp does all the time. That's what he would have done. And I left Wembley thinking, you know what, you've really gone down in my estimation today. Not because of the decision, but of the way you handled it.
Well, disagree with a word of that.
Huge round of applause from the audience there. So, is that a sign that Klopp's just feeling the pressure, or he's not as nice as we all think he is?
He's not. He's very much somebody who he's always been. It's like Mourinho is a manipulator. He's always somebody who uses the media to pass a message. He's in a way better than Mourinho at it and worse than Mourinho. But there is always, for example, one thing which is absolutely typical of Klopp and of this kind of manipulators, when he does five interviews to five different broadcasters and then does the press conference, he will use the same words, the same scenario, whatever the questions are. So, but that's, you know, okay, fair enough. That's the way you deal with the media in 2017. But there is very much, I think, a tendency with him to try and bring the people who talk to him, to put them in a position where he's so charismatic and so funny and so this and so that, yet you don't ask the questions that you really want to ask. And I've been in this position, so I plead guilty myself. But sometimes I thought, I'm really going to have a go at him today. And after, you know, two words, and I go, ha! And I was, you know, I didn't do my job properly. And so he's a manipulator. He's also a bloody fine coach, you know, let's not forget that. You know, it's not a question of saying he's crap. He won the German title against a great Bayern team. He took Dortmund to a Champions League final. His team is wonderful to look at, but he perhaps is not the total finished product that we think he is, or we thought he was.
I think Philippe makes a very interesting point about the fact that it was Lovren he took off. Lovren has had a tough time of it lately. You know, he's had, I think, marital problems. It's very stressful. He's playing through pain. He hasn't been playing particularly well. The fans are on his back. That, you know, taking him off after 31 minutes in a big game at Wembley that's been watched by people all over the world is the kind of total humiliation that could end a player, you know. And I'm not sure Klopp, you know, is it his responsibility to worry about things like that, or is it just his responsibility to win the game? Lovren has also had to contend with, you know, this relentless pursuit of Virgil van Dijk by Liverpool, which isn't great going to do his confidence a world of good either, you know.
Yeah, although to be fair to Klopp, he did say he could do it in trainers. We don't know if in slippers he may have had a similar game to Lovren. Jimmy Traore said, no way you can win trophies with defence like that. Come on, Liverpool, wake up. Which producer Jonathan believes is ironic. Huddersfield 2, Manchester United 1. Jose said Manchester United's attitude was worse than playing in a friendly. If I was a Manchester United supporter, I'd be really disappointed, because you can accept losing because the opponent had more quality, but not because the opponent had more attitude. I mean, United were, once again, we should praise Huddersfield. They were very good in that first half. Manchester United, by all accounts, were sort of insipid in that first half. Baz.
Yeah, well, I'd rather praise Huddersfield, to be honest, because I thought they were absolutely outstanding. You know, Manchester United had 78% of possession, but as Graham Souness pointed out in an interview, I think published on Saturday, it's where you have this possession that's important, more so than how much of it you have. And Huddersfield were so well organised that they restricted Manchester United to just three shots on target, kept them away from their penalty area, away from their goal. Romelu Lukaku had three touches inside the Huddersfield penalty area in the entire game, and that's a measure of how good Huddersfield were. You look at the Huddersfield central defence, Matthias Jorgensen and Christopher Schindler, absolutely outstanding. You know, compare that to the Liverpool debacle. Again, you know, we'll get to this game, I'm sure. Brighton's central defenders, Lewis Dunk and Shane Duffy, outstanding again against West Ham. So, you know, you don't necessarily need big name, massively expensive players to have a good defence. It's all about good organisation, and
it's about not making mistakes as well, isn't it? I mean, because
everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah, true, but Mata makes a mistake. Huddersfield score. Lindelof, I mean, it was windy.
They were forced into those mistakes, okay. By Huddersfield's pressing.
Defending is the one thing that, as a coach, you can actually work on and actually make your team better at, because it is about organisation. It's not something. That's also why it's hard to evaluate defenders, because their mistakes often arise from a collapse of the organisation of the team as a whole. But again, like, word out to Huddersfield, because they restricted United's shots. So I think United had 9 shots in the whole game, but they also produced very bad shots. They weren't particularly great. Their expected goals was less than 1, and Huddersfield managed to capitalise on the few really good chances they had at the other end. I thought Aaron Moy was great.
Moy bien.
Romelu Lukaku. I've given him far more credit than he deserves. He had 2 touches in the Huddersfield
penalty. Really? Oh, you improved his expected touches by 33% just then. XT, that's what that is. The Huddersfield centre-backs, both skippers at their last side, which probably makes a difference. And actually, just seeing the Huddersfield fans, Philippe, at the end, and the owner and the manager and the players, and I don't know about you, I need things during a season to remind me why I love football and the whole point of this.
And you think reverence, you know, the curtsy.
If you're a Huddersfield fan, and the best you've had in the last, I don't know how long, is like the Andy Booth years. And he was great, and that was great in a different way. Mm-hmm. To go, we've got a league match against Manchester United, and we've won. And that is just a reason why football should carry on existing, you know?
I think you've said it all. Well done, Max.
Thank you so much.
Jose Mourinho, a bit like Klopp as well, you know, shifted the focus away from himself, blamed the players. Weirdly seemed to criticise Ander Herrera for saying the exact same thing he did, which I didn't quite understand.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit... Herrera did a Mertesacker. Because Mertesacker did exactly the same thing when Arsenal were beaten the other day, saying, we didn't want it as much as they did. They deserved to win, and which is, of course, pretty hard to hear. But the Mourinho thing was such... Again, we talk about manipulation, and the manipulation was, basically, the problem, I think, is that Mourinho, the last week, hasn't been at his absolute best, which is odd, because you think they're in a position of strength in the league and in the Champions League. They go to Liverpool, this magnificent defensive Liverpool, and they play for a 0-0. Well done, guys. At Benfica, against a team that is going through some severe difficulties, they only owe their success to a fluky goal and the mistake of an 18-year-old goalkeeper after having produced absolutely zero in terms of attacking play. And then they get beat by Huddersfield.
On this subject of not wanting it, though...
This thing of not taking risks is in itself a risk. Yeah. And that's what Mourinho is doing at the moment.
Especially when you see how Manchester City are playing and now Spurs are playing. You know, Manchester United want to win the title. They've surely got to do more.
It's a bit like in The Lord of the Rings, like Gandalf tells Frodo that basically... Why they can destroy the ring is because Sauron can't imagine that they would not want to wield the power but destroy it. And I kind of weirdly think of Mourinho in that sense, where any other coach on the planet would want to hold this power of, you know, Mkhitaryan, Mata, Lukaku, and he's just like, no, I'm going to hold them back. We're going to play safe against this, as Philippe said, magnificent Liverpool defence that is just so hard to break down.
I don't know, I wish Tolkien had been an accountant, because seriously, those books... And those films, I mean, seriously.
Send the Nazguls.
They are so boring. You can agree or disagree with me. Going back to that, you know, Manchester United saying, Jose saying, well, we didn't really want it. And I bang on about amateur football. Then you come off the pitch and they go, you know, they wanted it more than us. And that's fair enough for people who've been working all week and half the team have been out all night. But how can one team, how can you not, it's your job. Like, how is that? I mean, I can understand...
The difficulty, I mean, I don't want to be the devil's advocate, and really the devil's advocate in this particular sense, but for a side like Huddersfield Town, this genuinely was perhaps the fixture of the year. So you prepare for it as you would prepare for a Champions League final or a World Cup final. Mm. It's a bit more difficult when you're Manchester United, you're away to Huddersfield to prepare for this as if it were, well, I would say almost like a difficult Premier League game.
And it was a bit cold and wet and windy, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also cold and wet and windy at Old Trafford, for all I know. You know, I've been there on a few occasions when it was like that. No, it's a bizarre one. I think, no, it's a question of not being able to release that team at times, which is very frustrating because I think we've all felt since the beginning of the season that this Manchester United team was more complete, more balanced than it had been for quite a while, that there was pace in it, and that if you could give them a little bit more freedom, which Mourinho did, for example, at Chelsea in his second season when he came back, where they played really good stuff and became champions, they would be able to go forward with perhaps more purpose and not see Manchester City now 5 points ahead and Tottenham starting to put a series of results ahead.
I think a certain factor here is Paul Pogba's injury. I mean, Mourinho made a big deal out of it, and I guess we can understand now why he's made such a big deal out of it. It's because without him, the midfield just kind of slows down a bit and they can't release their wide players at just quite the same pace.
I think that is fair. And he's missed Fellaini as well, who's been a game changer on several occasions, but come on, he's got the squad.
United go to Swansea in the Carabao. Everton 2, Arsenal 5. Ram says, are the rumours of Moyes back to Everton just the management's way of getting the fans to get behind Ronald Koeman? Is Koeman gone, Priya?
I kind of thought of this yesterday as well. Is the fact that, well, I think personally Koeman has a certain ceiling as a manager. I just kind of very briefly thinking back, he's always done well with teams that are not expected to do that well. So when he took her at Feyenoord, they'd been finishing mid-table, hadn't really made the top four in ages. And then he led them to successive, you know, top three, top four. I think he finished second one season as well. And Southampton as well. I mean, I think they did pretty well on a squad that is, you know, pretty much not expected to be anything above 9th, 10th. And I think, was it, he finished 7th one season? Mm. But yeah, pretty good. And they played really well as well. But then, given talent and given a side where the players are ambitious, the club wants to be ambitious and achieve more, he tends to struggle. And I think he does have a kind of safety-first approach that works at a team that is, you know, trying to punch above its weight, as opposed to a team that is, you know, profligate with talent. And you know at Valencia he did win the Spanish Cup, but he left them 2 points above the relegation zone, and he had like David Villa, David Silva, Juan Mata. There is blame on Everton as well in terms of their transfer dealings, because individually the signings are really good, but together I'm not sure they fit together.
Barry,
I think it's an interesting point, because Liverpool and Everton have quite a lot of common beyond the fact that they're both on Merseyside, because, you know, Everton sort of went all out for Olivier Giroud to replace Romelu Lukaku, didn't get him and didn't get anyone else either. Liverpool were the same with Virgil van Dijk. You know, there were alternatives that they ended up not getting because they seemed so hell-bent on getting van Dijk, and both teams ended up making weird signings of players they didn't really need. You know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain springs to mind. Any number of sort of scampering playmakers in Everton's case.
The thing is, I think it's hard. It's perhaps easy to forget how swift the fall has been. I remember talking to a number of people at Everton and around the club at the end of last season. They were pleased with what had happened in more ways than one. I remember doing the same thing just before the season. The pre-season had been terrific. They were really up for it. I'm talking about the players. Some very good players had come in. And it's true that David Klaassen is a very good player. Believe me, Giffy Sigurdsson is a very, very good player. Michael Keane is 10 times better than what we've seen so far. And you can carry on like that. And apparently what happened, and what I've been told, is that Koeman sort of cut himself from the rest of the club. So as the season was about to start, and as I don't think he really gets the club, what Everton is, and that he's in his bubble now.
Can you be a bit more specific?
I can be a bit more specific in as much as in that there was last season there seemed to be quite good communication within all the elements of the club, including you know the under 23s, under 17s, under 18s, and so forth. It seemed everybody was working towards the same goal. And what I've been told, and what seems to be shown on the pitch, that actually now the senior team is very much Koeman's thing. And there is, it's a bit like an isolated element of a club which has always been about the team being more than an isolated element of it.
And there's an element with recruitment as well, where I've heard that, you know, because Steve Walsh came in from Leicester, didn't he? And he was meant to be, he's sort of got this amazing reputation, but by all accounts, he's not getting to do what he wants to do because there's more than one set of people trying to bring in players. Did anyone see Angry Birds' terrible tweet going, our reaction to that defeat was like a bird crying? You're just like, I don't think Everton fans would really appreciate that. Jordan Pickford has faced more shots in a season and a half than John Burridge did in his whole 30-year career. I've made that up, but
you may not be wrong,
but it might be right. While we're on Everton, that fan holding his kid while swinging haymakers at the Lyon keeper has been banned. People.
Did you see the interview he gave?
What did he blame?
He blamed Everton for not taking their elfin safety responsibilities seriously enough. And then
he's got a point, doesn't he? He was able to do
but,
it.
But the absolute gem was nothing was his fault. His ex-girlfriend and the mother of the child in question is beside herself with worry that, you know, social services are going to get involved. He, needless to say, lives with his mum. And he said he was so preoccupied with shouting abuse at various Everton players and telling them how shit they were that he got carried away in the moment. And that's why it happened.
We've all been there.
But I just, this notion that, quite apart from taking a swing at an opposition player while holding a child, you know, the reason you're all—it's quite okay to shout and scream profane abuse at footballers while holding your 3-year-old.
We should mention Arsenal. Look, they were in crisis a week ago, and the crisis is averted again. Well done, Arsene. They had, you know, they all sorts of records for number of shots and number of shots on target, and they did look good, didn't they? And Ozil played well, and he gets a lot of stick.
It's again what I would call spectacular easy, because when you've got so much space to show that you're good on the ball, you use it. And Arsenal have got a group of players who are extremely good on the ball, and Mesut Ozil was superb on that occasion. Alexis Sanchez looked like he wanted it, and you can go through the whole side. There was certainly decent spirit within the side, but also there was far too much space given to players who are very good at exploiting it. I mean, it's basically not Everton not doing the very basic job that every single team in the Premier League, and I think probably in Europe, knows has to be done against Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I think whilst it was probably Arsenal's best performance of the season, I don't think the crisis is quite averted. I still think they have certain issues.
Arsenal still in crisis. It's the constants in life that keep us going. Well, let's just salute Olivier Giroud's ridiculous goal in the Europa League. That was a delight, wasn't it?
Yes.
They're home to Norwich in the Carabao. Arsenal, Everton go to Chelsea. We mentioned it briefly early. West Ham 0, Brighton 3. West Ham were really bad and Brighton were excellent, Barry.
Yes, as I said already, their defence was outstanding. I thought Duffy and Dunk brilliant, like 11 clearances each they made apparently. But West Ham's passing was wayward, their crossing was wayward. They, as Jacob has pointed out on several occasions already this season, don't seem to have any discernible plan. I'm a huge fan of Slaven Bilic as a bloke, but he just, you know, looks like a dead man walking.
There was a moment where Slaven,
he actually almost literally looks like a dead man walking.
And he, as we've mentioned before, the more under pressure he gets, the deeper his voice gets, and basically dogs can only hear high voices, can't they? I don't know, it's only whales can understand he's saying now.
I'm not worried, I'm realistic.
Yeah, but there was a moment in the 89th minute where he was, you know, putting his hand over his mouth like everyone, all people in football do, talking to his assistant. And I was doing a show for Sky with Danny Mills, and Danny was like, what on earth can they be talking about? Right, what possible tactical thing can they be doing now at 3-0 down?
Well, they could have been, like, organising,
you know, holiday
pints later on, yeah, post-match pint. I mean, I saw a stat somewhere, I think it might be in the BBC website. West Ham have conceded more headed goals than any other Premier League team this season, also conceded more set-piece goals than any other Premier League team. But I mean, with the greatest respect to Glenn Murray, I don't think he's quite cut out to make it as a Premier League striker. You know, I think Championship, he's a good Championship striker who isn't getting any younger, but you know, when he's popping up scoring two goals, I think something's gone wrong.
Yeah, and what also is wrong is that you look at the, I think, previous three games. I'm putting the Tottenham game aside at the London Stadium, but they had only conceded one goal or something like that, West Ham, and then suddenly you had Reed was back with Zabaleta and forget who is the third, Font. Fonch. And sometimes with the three, sometimes back four, you think, okay, so finally the three of them are together and it's looking a little bit more stable. You looked at Brighton and at their away record, which was absolutely appalling.
That was their first away win in the top flight since 1983.
Mm. Yeah.
They've done well to survive in the top division for that long.
And their best result so far had been the 0-0 at Watford when Miguel Britos had been sent off for the assault of the century, and where they had played 11v10 for 70 minutes or so, or even more than that.
I mean, it was so comfortable for them.
And you know, suddenly Brighton goes away from London Stadium with a 3-0 win. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Does anybody think that a change of manager would enable West Ham to redress the current failures or drawbacks or whatever? It's such a mess at every single level that you wonder if that could be the case.
I think it's similar to Everton in a sense, because it is a bit of a failure of recruitment over the summer that you think, will a change of manager necessarily, you know, like, I feel like a new manager would just be saddled with more of the responsibility of trying to make sense of this group of players.
Did you think their signings were bad? Because I confess to looking in the summer going, actually, that could kind of work.
I thought they reminded me of a fantasy team from 2011, essentially.
That's the kind I like.
But yeah, I mean, it was a great stark contrast, because I thought Brighton did really well with their recruitment in the summer, especially Pascal Gross, who they got from Germany. I did a bit of an analysis at the end of last season looking at the top creators in Europe, and he was up there. And he's had a hand in six of seven, I think, Brighton goals this season. So well done to them for that.
The Izquierdo goal... yes, we don't. Joe Hart probably should have saved it, but more fun was the knee slide from Izquierdo, and behind him, Anthony Knockhart coming in to do a knee slide as well, and just like face planting, which was great. Also, I haven't spent a lot of time studying Brighton, and they have Gaetan Bong, who plays for them. And on the subject of, he's a good player.
He's a very good player, and he's also a top bloke, if I may say so.
Oh, really?
Well, absolutely top bloke, former Metz and Valenciennes, and who got, you know, people forgot about him when he went to Greece. But he's a very good player, and he was a very important player in the lower division. And he got injured, and he's only slowly coming back, but he's going to become a fixture in the side. A very, very good player to have in your team.
That's a more sensible point that I was going to make, which was...
You were just going to make fun of his name.
Well, I was going to say, if he married the sister of Chandler Bing, you'd have the Bing Bongs.
They also have David Proper, who's a... So they have a proper football man in there.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Frank sent a message on this, and he's basically won the footballers who could marry each other and create great names. If Christian Fuchs married Shea Given's sister and they named their child in honour of comic actor Zero Mostel, Zero Fuchs Givens. That's marvellous. Right, that'll do for part one. We'll do more Premier League in part two. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Chelsea 4, Watford 2. What a great game. You were there, Philippe.
Yeah, loved it.
Watford should have been, 4-1 up or something, if it wasn't for Richarlison's 50p head.
Yeah, we're not going to be too tough on Richarlison, who's been,
great,
wonderful,
yeah,
all through the season. And actually had a very good game apart from two absolutely awful misses.
And he's not really there to do that, Philippe, is he?
You know? Yeah. Well, yes.
But it happens. It happens.
But... it could have become, at one point I thought, I mean, beginning of the second half, I thought, this looks like what happened against Burnley after Cahill was sent off. Like a team is disintegrating in front of our eyes. Suddenly, Chelsea wasn't there anymore. they were absolutely abysmal. There was no structure left, no organization. Conte looked actually a little bit, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I don't know what I can do.
It's a sign of a great team if they can win when playing badly, Philippe. Well, I read that, that in is the one, pundit's
that
manual.
Is, this is one cliche that I would like to, you know. The reason why they won is because they ended up playing quite well at the end. So not because they were playing badly before. This is quite, you know, there's a difference. And no, confirmation that Watford is certainly, it's not a revelation, it's confirmation. They were absolutely terrific. And one moment when they switched off and Batshuayi, the man who scores more goals per minute than anybody else in the world, is supposedly. And otherwise, they would have walked away with three well-deserved points. But on the other hand, they fought back. That's what one thing you would say. But I don't think it will assuage any of the doubts that you know we all have, I believe, about what's going to happen to Chelsea this season, certainly in the league.
Is that just because they're playing? They've got too many games to play and not a big enough squad? Is it that simple?
It's not just that. I think there are other issues. I think that I would say that Conte is prioritising the Champions League. I think two of the proofs of that is the fact that, for example, well, his two most potent attacking threats are Eden Hazard and Alvaro Morata. No big revelation here. Hazard was brought back to play against Atletico. Morata was brought back to play against AS Roma and not against Premier League teams when they could have been playing before. So, and it's the one thing. I think he's got a point to make in Europe because his record, as we know, is pretty poor, if not to say mediocre in Europe, with some very good teams. He's won the Premier League already. He can see he's not stupid. He can see Manchester City is way ahead. He can see how well things are going at Tottenham. He knows that Manchester United will be there or thereabouts, as people say. And I think his attention is more on that than anything. And the second thing, to stop this long rant, is he's a manager who is a terrific manager who asks, demands an awful, awful, awful lot from his players in training. You know, they train without the ball most of the time. Physically, it's very demanding. The sessions are long, tiring, and so forth. And this kind of manager can be extraordinarily successful when they are as punctilious and as driven as Antonio Conte is. But when results don't go quite your own way, and talk to any footballer about it, the atmosphere changes very, very quickly. And I don't get the feeling that Chelsea is a very happy place at the moment. I genuinely don't get that feeling at all. The wins are there. Some of the wins were there. Then there have been the performance against Roma was, I think, lucky in the extreme. The result was lucky in the extreme. There have been all those counter performances against Arsenal and even against Watford. And I genuinely don't feel it's a happy place. And I'm a bit worried, if worried is the word about what's going to happen to them in the rest of the season.
It's a good rant, Philippe.
Okay.
I enjoyed that.
This is two for two now.
Isn't it? Yeah, not sworn yet, though.
No, no swearing today.
No, okay.
It's a no swearing Monday.
Barry?
Just one thing about Marco Silva. I think he's a terrific manager who will go far in the game. But I thought he sort of meddled needlessly and perhaps cost Watford the game. It may be a harsh criticism, but
I think a bit harsh. I mean, Roberto Pereira going off was really, it was exactly the wrong time. He'd been the best player on the pitch.
And Deeney as well.
I don't think he should have taken off Troy Deeney, and that's when it all sort of went wrong.
Fitness levels, perhaps, for Deeney?
I don't know. I don't know if there was niggles or fitness, or if he was just, if it ain't broke, break it. But, I just thought it was, a decision that backfired, and, I'm not having a go at him. I think he's great. I hate him, yes.
Priya?
I think the Deeney sub was actually important, because Deeney was actually pulling away quite a few of the Chelsea defenders, which was what created space for Richarlison on the other side. And that's why he got into so many really good goal-scoring positions. And I think that kind of... And also the fact that Chelsea kind of moved away from their system and went to kind of what looked like a lopsided 4-4-2 as well, with Azpilicueta going to the other wing. And, word out to Azpilicueta as well, coming up with the kind of crucial goal. That man he would be able to play anywhere and actually, probably be a decent mid-table Premier League team.
It's interesting, Merce on Friday was saying he was angry with Troy Deeney, because on Monday we were pleased to see a footballer come out and be honest about how he took on Arsenal. And Merce was just like, oh, well, I didn't see Troy Deeney come out and say that when Man City stuffed them 6-0. I didn't see Troy Deeney, you know, it's nice and easy when you win to come out and be like, oh, we did this and we did this. And actually, not necessarily. It was just an interesting other take on what I was just generally quite positive about, seeing someone be honest and say, this is my sort of tactical plan. But I suppose that's easy when you've won a game, and it's not so easy afterwards.
But by the same token, I mean, Merce gets an awful shoo-in sometimes for some of the things he says, and often deserves it, you know, his rant about Marco Silva getting the Hull job being a case in point. But Merce is clever, he knows his stuff, you know, and I just find, you know, that's a very interesting point he made.
Yeah.
Is he just prone to brain freezes, or is he saying the stuff, as someone who knows him, is he saying this stuff?
I agree. I just agree with whoever I'm in the room with, Gary. You know me. Something that troubles me, I said this on the radio, Baz, yesterday, Conte sort of crowd surfing. I think if you're above 50, the only people who can crowd surf are aging rockers, right? So Mick Jagger, fine, dive into the crowd. You're in the Rolling Stones.
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce, you can do it.
Iggy Pop.
He's not 50 yet.
Who's Springsteen?
No, Conte.
How old is Conte? Well, he's about 60.
47 or 48.
He's 47. Well, anyway, he's too old to be crowd surfing, his legs waddling about in the air, being held. It's just not, you know, I don't mind Pep Guardiola wearing a hoodie. That's fine. But the line, I'm drawing the line at crowd surfing managers. He should be booked. If players can't do it, he can't do it. Who's with me?
Again, this is like you're Manchester United in a grey street. I don't care.
Okay, thanks very much. Chelsea play Everton in the Carabao. Man City, Burnley. A lot of debate about this penalty, okay? And Bernardo Silva went down quite theatrically.
It was a penalty.
And also,
he must have hurt a lot.
Yeah.
He has his ankle completely yanked the wrong way.
Exactly.
It's amazing that people say, oh, look at them, he's falling easily.
Anyone who's turned their ankle, even on like a... on like the curb, knows it hurts, and you do for like a second, you go, ah, and then you're all right. And that's what happened. I think it was just totally bizarre that was a debate.
Especially when you're a footballer and the ankle is perhaps the part of the body which is the most fragile, the one which if you actually damage it, that's the most long-lasting effect. So yes, you're a bit worried when you've just been turned over like he was.
It ended Van Basten. I would say
I can't believe there was even people, I mean, discussing that.
I think
that.
It was just the angle of the TV, like in the wide view, looked like, because he was going a bit wide and it was his trailing leg that got caught. Maybe on first view it looked a bit contentious, but on replay it was definitely a penalty, no question about it.
Richard asks, do you think Manchester City will slip up anywhere, Barry?
They will, of course. They'll probably get beaten at
some
stage.
That was the most Father Ted I've heard you for a while. We will.
I didn't see this game, so I'm not really in a position to comment on it, but a 3-0 sounds fairly emphatic. But
it wasn't.
Was it not? No?
No, it's one of those games when you see the highlights, you think that City had the game all in hand. They didn't. They suffered.
Did really well for most of the game.
And Pope had a good game. I mean, obviously, if you play City, your goalkeeper's got to play well, hasn't he? But he did have a good game.
Until Jesus came on.
Yeah, well... He had a good game for a while, at least, didn't he? So, look, I mean, Manchester City just playing ruthlessly well. They are home to the Championship leaders, Wolves, in the Carabao, in what looks like quite an interesting fixture.
That could be a fun game,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, could be fun. Daniel sends this message as we look into the rest of the Premier League fixtures. I know it's a bit early, but could you just ask on the pod if it's just this season or not that the games not involving the top six are such a non-event to watch? Southampton v West Brom does not excite me whatsoever. Has this always been the case?
It's an interesting point.
Do you think Daniel's just getting older and getting ground down by life?
It's possible too. Could be a bit of both. I mean, you do wonder what is the point of supporting West Brom?
That's going to go down well.
You know, I'm just going to take West Brom as a case in point. You know, they are not going to get in the top six. They're not going to get relegated. What's the point? You know, like, I'm a Sunderland fan. They're hopeless.
But at least they go always, down.
They're always, like, fighting for something.
Yeah.
Usually against relegation.
No, I don't.
And I use the word fight in the very loosest sense.
You could argue, and this is where I've got a problem with West Brom and with Stoke, is that, okay, your objective is survival. You want to make sure you stay in a very rich league, okay? It's fine. One of the reasons for that being that you will have the resources to have a squad big enough to try and do something in cup competitions, but they don't.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what is absolutely so horrible about these clubs at the moment.
That's a brilliant point.
And because they don't try. They don't try. They will rest players for the League Cup or the FA Cup. That's the only thing you can go for, mate. Wake up.
Southampton did get to the League Cup final.
And should have won it.
And should have won it, yeah.
Absolutely.
Just before, I sent a tweet about 10 minutes to go in that Southampton-West Brom game, being very annoyed that I'd wasted my time watching it, saying that games, sort of lower mid-table games, should just be 10 minutes long. Maybe 20 points but for a win. And then, you know, they'd really give it a first goal wins, something, I don't know. And then Sofyan Boufal did that. Do you want to sing it?
No.
but you know, it was a goal to grace any game, but it the game did not deserve that goal, did it? It was just a thing of total joy. And we all know Boufal has that in his locker to do once every 2 years.
Once every 23 games, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he scores once every 23 games. Yeah. But he doesn't score like that once every 23
so
games.
So once every 3 years, then.
Yeah. Yeah. and that's what... I mean, otherwise, there was nothing else to discuss.
The best part of that goal was when, I think it was Norman Dawson just like clashing into each other.
Brilliant. Swansea 1, Leicester 2. Okazaki with his smiley face. Fabianski was great, but not enough. They before this game, well, I'm sure we'll get stick for not taking these games as seriously as we should, but they played No Limit by 2 Unlimited before Swansea Leicester. I thought that might be overstating, you know, the facts. Seems there's some limits to that, but anyone have anything to say about it? It was good for Michael Appleton to get that win. Interesting, afterwards he just says, I've signed up to be assistant manager, that's what I want to be, trying to make the case in point that when they bring someone in, they probably won't want to keep Michael Appleton there, will they? That's what managers do.
He certainly didn't have, you know, sometimes, well, his predecessor is a case in point. If someone gets a job in a caretaker role and they're actively hoping to get it full time, Appleton clearly has the air about a man who knows this is a temporary gig. He's going to do, you know, winning a few games will do his reputation no harm, but I don't think he's any chance of getting the job at full time.
What about whoever they offer it to has to fight him for it?
Oh, I wouldn't fancy that.
Newcastle Palace, good win for Newcastle. Slightly fortuitous goal, 5 minutes in time. And Stoke 1, Bournemouth 2. Bournemouth without Josh King and Jermaine Defoe. Lovely side foot finish from Andrew Sermon. Yeah,
I mean, just passing build up as well. Absolutely lovely. Yeah. Yeah.
Paul says, why is no one saying Mark Hughes is under pressure at Stoke? Last season was shocking, 2 wins in 9.
I did on the pod last year, actually. I had a rant about Mark Hughes.
Do you want to do another one?
No.
You can swear
you can just,
if you want.
Go back. No, I don't want to swear. I think he's very lucky in a way. To have a board who is as patient as it has been. I think it's his fifth season with Stoke. There was one point at which you thought, oh, he's going to try and depulis the team and transform it into something more pleasant to the eye and perhaps look up. And it looked as if it almost might happen. But then, I mean, some of the recruitment of that in that club has been bizarre, to say the least. And they're not going anywhere.
How long would you say depulisification takes?
Well, let's think.
Well, towards the end of that game, you know, I was lumping it up to Peter Crouch. You know, bring on Crouchy, get it up to him. And, you know, I love Peter Crouch as much as anyone else, but it doesn't really smack of depulisification.
Yeah, but we know when you recruited players like Shaqiri or Joe Allen or... even Arnautovic, I mean, who is Arnautovic, of course, but Boyan, and players who have actually underperformed, almost all of them, and who are decent players. It's not a bad squad. They've invested quite a bit of money, Stoke. You know, they had, at one point, they had more Barcelona players in their squad than any other team apart from Barcelona.
The most former Champions League winners in the whole Premier League, I think.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's not going anywhere, and you can't see a way out of it. That's the thing. And not calling for Hughes to be sacked, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose the point is there are 20 teams, right? So the top six are going to finish in the top six. So then you know, you're coming up against these sides. It's difficult, and you have to survive because of the amount of money. Do you reckon
I'm actually looking, you know, I'm still thinking about this mid-table thing. I'm looking, you know, what other teams... which are not in the top six, Newcastle, yeah, yes, I'll definitely go and watch. I want to watch Newcastle. I want to watch Newcastle, and they probably will finish mid-table. And yeah, I want to. Burnley, I quite enjoy watching Burnley after, you know, mid-table teams. Liverpool, we've already talked about that. Huddersfield, yes, I enjoy watching that. Brighton, it's a promoted team. It's interesting. West Brom, boof. Leicester have been actually quite fun because you never know what's going to happen, and they can be actually pretty good against better teams. Swansea,
so is it maybe a case that, so, you know, you if you've been hanging around stinking the place up for long enough, people start just to get sick of you? I'm talking about myself, obviously.
You're bringing a transfer request right now.
I'm totally talking about myself.
What I mean by that is that the teams which are a turn-off, shall we say, in the Premier League are a minority when you look at it a bit more closely.
No, but unlike West Brom, I bring a lot to the party.
Southampton, West Brom was just neither of those teams really, you know, have scored a lot in recent times. Just a bad matchup in general.
Football league time. Six of the top eight in the Championship won this weekend. Josh Maddison scored the only goal in the East Anglian derby, the second East Anglian derby after Cambridge Peterborough, as Norwich beat Ipswich.
That was a very poor game.
It was a poor game. It was a nice finish, to be fair. They're up to sixth after losing three of their first five. The rest of the top six reads Wolves, Cardiff, Sheffield United, Leeds and Aston Villa, who were in crisis at the start. They all won. John Terry scored his first goal in claret and blue. Barry, you liked this incident at Molineux, didn't you? With Preston's Alan Brown on a yellow. Foul Wolves, Alfred and Dye in stoppage time. And you can take up the story.
Well, he got another yellow, marched off down the tunnel, and then the referee, I'm not sure who it was, realised that he hadn't shown him the red, so sent word that he was to be summoned back. So this bewildered player marched back out onto the nap of the pitch. The ref showed him the red. All admin and due process had officially been followed, so he marched off back down the tunnel again.
It's Stephen Martin, by the way.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
In League One, Richie Welland's first game as full-time older manager was a bumpy one. They were 1-0 up, 3-1 up, 4-2 up before MK Dons got an 89th minute equaliser to make it 4-4. The top two. Are you happy? No.
Okay. You just said MK Dons.
Yeah, I know. they do exist, Philippe.
It's true.
Yeah. Top two, Shrewsbury and Wigan, both won. The Shrews are now 10 points clear of third, just 15 games played. Plymouth picked up only their second win of the season with a 1-0 win at AFC Wimbledon. Do you want to cheer AFC Wimbledon?
Yee.
And in League Two, only three teams in the top half won in a dry day for goals. Just 17 across 12 games. The highest scoreline being 2-1 wins for Forest Green Rovers at Stevenage and the mighty Cambridge United against Chesterfield, coming back from 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go. That'll do for part two. In part three, Europe, and we'll start with Sid. Welcome back to part three of Guardian Football Weekly, European time. Let's start with Sid in Spain. How are you, Sid?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. I love this Twitter conversation that you were vaguely involved with, Sid. Someone called Russell, who said, La Liga, nonsense league. It only exists to fill the coffers of Barca and Real, kept alive abroad by the Sid Lowe and Graham Hunter hype machine, which was the first band I saw live, actually. You're doing a marvellous...
We weren't very good. I think you should probably admit that.
You're doing a great job at keeping La Liga alive, Sid.
I'm flattered that he thinks my powers are such, and I'd like to think that if I did have such enormous powers, I would probably put them to slightly better use than just keeping La Liga afloat.
Everyone knows Hunter is carrying you, Sid.
Absolutely.
Where do you want to start, Sid?
Well, I mean, I suppose the obvious place to start, not least because I'm sitting here writing about it at the moment, and so I can repeat all the things that people will then later read, or perhaps not read, is Valencia, who are, I think it's fair to say, back. They're a proper team again. They're a team that compete. They're a team that look like they genuinely could take the final Champions League place this season, perhaps even more than that. It's their best start of the season for well over 50 years. And they beat Sevilla 4-0 at the weekend. And all right, two of the goals are very late, and perhaps it slightly flatters them. But they look like a proper team again. They've got a manager who's got them playing well. I mean, it's a start that they've even got a manager at all, because you know over the last few years they've had people with either no managerial experience, or even in some cases managers who didn't necessarily even see themselves as managers. You know, they had the caretaker guy in charge, who was the matchday delegate four times over the last 2 years alone. And they look really, really good. And they also, by the way, in Geddes, who they've got on loan from Paris Saint-Germain, he is brilliant. I mean, a properly good player and very, very, very exciting.
Real Madrid beat Eibar 3-0. Akshay has a question for you, Sid. Was the Casemiro incident versus Eibar a penalty? Is this another call Casemiro has gotten away with?
Well, he's certainly got away with quite a lot of calls, but not this one. I must admit, watching it live, I didn't think it was a penalty. It looks suspiciously like a dive, but it's one of those where you can see the foot come across and you wonder if there might be some contact. But helpfully, we have a surprisingly honest player and a surprisingly honest manager. It was on Inouye, who said after the game, told his manager after the game that it wasn't a penalty, that it wasn't a foul, that he hadn't been touched. And his manager then came out and told the TV cameras this. And he said, the problem with Inouye is he's too honest for his own good. He told us it wasn't a penalty. I don't know if that counts as honest, telling them in the dressing room after the game. Surely honest is telling the referee that it's not.
I like to think of myself as honest, Sid, but on our Saturday game, it was quite windy and one of the opposition struck one in from 30 yards and it went in the bottom corner, but there was a hole in the net and all of us just kept our heads down and the ref was so old on the centre circle he didn't give it. We just took the goal kick and carried on. So apologies to City of London FC for that. Barcelona.
You're a disgrace.
I didn't see it. I was on the touchline. I just didn't see it. Barcelona atop. They beat Malaga 2-0. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, nothing game really. Although, of course, it starts with a goal in the, I think it's 120 seconds in or something like that. Gerard Deulofeu scores, but the ball had gone out before he scored. It's crossed in with the ball probably the best part of 60, 70 centimetres over the line. And, of course, as you can imagine, that's caused a bit of a stir on one half of the divide in Spain.
And Atletico were unbeaten. They won 1-0 at Celtic again, and they've drawn four of their nine games. But they're not doing very well in the Champions League. Is there a difference? Are they doing something different in La Liga than the Champions League, or is it more complicated than that?
No, not really. I mean, I think if you look at their league form, you'd say they haven't played particularly well domestically either. I mean, I think earlier in the season, you had this sense that they were kind of Atletico, were being Atletico. But you can look at this weekend as well and say almost the same thing. You know, they go away, they win 1-0. That's a very Atletico way of doing it. But it actually felt like they kind of won 1-0 a little bit more incidentally than by design. It wasn't that they defended brilliantly. It wasn't that they made life impossible for Celta. Jan Oblak in goal is playing really, really well and has been very, very important this season. They don't look quite right. I mean, they've been very unsure about who their striking partner for Griezmann should be, which I suppose is partly a product of the fact that they're bringing Diego Costa at Christmas. So, you know, anyone who plays knows it's a temporary measure. You've got a manager who knows, well, whoever I put in now, it kind of is just keeping the seat warm for Costa when he arrives. And obviously that takes the gamble that he's going to arrive and play well from the very start, which of course he might not. So I don't think there is a huge difference between what's happened in La Liga and what's happened in the Champions League, with the possible exception of that one Chelsea game. But otherwise, they've been kind of a bit plodding, not awful, but not great.
Rumours of the Sid Lowe and Graham Hunter hype machine coming back, a reality show on UK Living, new single out, when?
The idea of me and Graham doing a single, so long as it's Graham singing, not me.
Hey, thanks for your time, Sid.
My pleasure.
One half of the hype machine there, Sid Lowe. Italy, Barry.
Big game in Italy was Friday night. Napoli v Inter, first v second. Finished a scoreless draw. Napoli were vastly superior, but Inter goalkeeper Handanovic had one of those games goalkeepers have.
Inter's first goal has drawn 76 games.
Really?
Barry. Yeah.
Well, that I didn't know.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, he made a series of excellent saves from Callion, Dries Mertens, Lorenzo, Insignia, Peter, Zielinski. Elsewhere, it all went much as you might expect. Milan failed to win again. They drew 0-0 with Genoa at home. Juventus put six packs to Udinese.
In that game, Mandzukic got a great red card where he was booked for dissent after a brawl and then basically flung his hand in the air and got booked for dissent.
Double dissent.
And Kadira scored a hat-trick. What are the odds?
Yeah, high, I think. I don't have them here.
Just looking at the Serie A table, there's eight teams there that are on less than a point a game, and that's after eight games. I was just comparing that to the other four leagues because, you know, it's a thing that the whatever about there being quite a few bad teams in the Premier League, that Serie A has more than most. So there's six in the Premier League on less than a point a game. I think that's after nine
rounds of fixtures. 5 in Spain, 4 in Germany, and just 1 in France.
Right, on to Germany. Tie at the top of the Bundesliga. Leaders Dortmund drew 2-2 at Eintracht Frankfurt. They were 2-0 up, conceded 2 goals in 4 minutes. England under 17 winger Jadon Sancho, who's brought back from that tournament. He made his debut with 8 minutes to go, couldn't find a winner. Bayern are level on points after a 1-0 win at Lowly Hamburg. Archie said, put your house on this. So lucky that they did win. Hamburg were down to 10 men after 39 minutes. Thomas Müller came on for James Rodriguez, set up the winner, and then went off injured. So he was only on for 10 minutes, which is quite nice. You could just do that every game, win the game, and then go off again. RB Leipzig, 1 point behind in third after a 1-0 win over Stuttgart. France, Philippe Auclair, you're French.
Yes, I am.
So you can tell us all about it. The Classico.
Yes, Le Classico. It was the proof that yet again, this is a game which is a bit different from any other in the French football calendar, because you wouldn't have expected the kind of game we saw looking at what both teams had done since the beginning of the season. But thankfully, Marseille showed up. Luis Gustavo was absolutely magnificent. There's no other word. Probably the player of the weekend in France. Loads of controversies, of course, loads of controversy with the Neymar sending off, which I thought was completely justified.
What happened?
He reacted to a pretty... I mean, he had been kicked left, right and centre throughout the whole game. And he reacted to another foul, but by pushing his opponent very strongly to the ground, having already had a yellow card. And it was overreaction, perhaps, but you shouldn't have reacted. And so it was a very logical second yellow card. And maybe that's what actually allowed PSG to equalise, because it was an instant Cavani who took the free kick in extra time and scored a very, very fine free kick, on which I think Steve Mandanda could have done better. But that's a different thing. But it was a cracking game.
Did Dani Alves get kicked? He said to Canal Plus ahead of the game, I couldn't tell you the name of a single Marseille player.
Yeah, well, that's part of the usual nonsense that goes with the sort of war of words that go into those games.
At least Danny Rose had the courtesy of Wikipedia, you know,
and Google. Yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at this particular game, it showed big holes in PSG's game, which I think is one of the most interesting things if you look at it from a bit further back, because Marseille were obviously up for it in a big way, but it was a very unconvincing performance by PSG, which tends to, you know, you really get the feeling, even though it's Unai Emery, who is a fine coach, has been there for a long time, it's literally give the ball to Cavani, Neymar and Mbappe, see what they can do. They combine quite well. When you're against the opponents like who are not up for it, like, for example, Celtic in the Champions League, unfortunately, it can be quite beautiful to watch. But again, that's what I call spectacular easy. When they come against a team which pressurizes them and pressurizes them high up the pitch as well, like Marseille did on this occasion, they find it very, very difficult indeed. And if you were to, you know, it's not a scandal, the result, the tool. But if there had to have been a winner, for me, it would have been certainly Marseille rather than...
Also on the point that you're saying about them just being told to, you know, pass it to the front three, yeah. I think it kind of does a bit of a disservice to someone like Marco Verratti, who's a fine footballer, but, you know, is kind of suffering in this
Yeah, the
imbalance.
Future of Italian football, as I've heard him nicknamed, and who is, he blows hot and cold and sometimes does absolutely wonderful things and you think, well, he's the solution. But they're midfield. Rabiot, Thiago Motta, Marco Verratti. I mean, Thiago Motta is showing his age. I think we can all agree on that. Adrien Rabiot, I still don't know what to think of him. He's marvellous talent, but incredibly inconsistent. And the same can be said of Marco Verratti. So you don't... It's not a team that has got the balance of other... You know, it's not a Real Madrid. It's not even a Manchester City. It's not there yet.
Kylian Mbappe has won the Golden Boy Award, Barry, for the best young player in Europe.
for which Guedes was not shortlisted.
You're asleep, Baz.
Which is, it shows how good an award. Dembele was shortlisted, not Guedes. Interesting.
Okay, yeah. Dembele second, Rashford third, Gabriel Jesus fourth, Donnarumma fifth. Shall I carry on? I didn't even know this thing existed.
I think it's Tuttosport, isn't it, which gives this award.
I mean, there's a range of winners. I think Anderson won it 1 year, but then you also have Cesc Fabregas and Leo Messi who won it as well. So could go either way.
I'd say Gabriel Jesus will be the best of the players you read out there.
Okay.
When they be those golden boys become golden men.
Well, Kylian Mbappe is not exactly a scandalous decision.
No.
The year is had.
I
since
think
it's over the calendar year.
Worth,
yeah. Barry, you're my golden boy.
Thank you. I am, 6 years older than you?
Age is just a number, Barry.
Okay.
When you've got such a velvety voice. Fitbar Corner, Barry, tell us all about it.
Okay, just one thing about the French league. It's going unnoticed. It's going a bit unnoticed, but Claudio Ranieri is doing something quite extraordinary with Nantes, whom everybody thought were, you know, relegation fodder. They're now up to third in the table after their win against Guingamp. They're not exactly the most pleasant team to watch. They do remind you a bit of sort of Leicester Mark II, but perhaps without the flair of Mahrez and the speed of Vardy. But
that sounds great.
Well, listen, for their fans, it's absolutely fantastic. And for any neutral, it's also great to see Nantes, who is one of the truly great French clubs, back near the top of the table. I'm really happy for that.
I hope their fans, they're probably worried Leicester might come in for him. They've a manager position vacant.
Hey, Barry, tell us what's happening in Scotland. League Cup semi-finals.
Celtic beat Hibs 4-2 in the first. Rangers lost the second semi-final on Sunday, 2-0 against Motherwell. Quite an aggressive, tasty match. Motherwell sort of... Rangers have this guy, Colombian guy, playing up front for them called Alfredo Morales. And he's a bit of a hothead. Word has got out that his reputation goes before him. He's only a kid, but he has a reputation as a hothead. And his team set out to antagonise him, see if they can get him to blow. And so Motherwell sort of systematically fouled him. Kenny Miller, again, this ongoing, he continues to be out of favour with Pedro Cascina, the manager, and he was watching from the stands. Carlos Penne was in his place and was absolutely rubbish. So it's only the League Cup, but Rangers haven't won a major trophy for 6 years, you know, so they need to get something. And they've lost that opportunity. I think most people were expecting them to win the game, but Cascino's, it looks like the jig will be up for him sooner rather than later. Although I did say that, I think, 3 weeks ago when he sort of cast Kenny Miller into the wilderness, but those things normally don't end well. I thought he'd be gone within a week, but he's hanging in there. And then there's a round of fixtures, midweek Scottish Premiership fixtures, the pick of them being Aberdeen v Celtic on Wednesday. It's first against, joint top. Celtic are top, but Aberdeen is the same number of points, I think.
Priya, it looks like you've written an entire essay on for Dutch Football Corner. So let's just read it out. Why not?
We can start with PSV, who won 1-0 at Heracles. It's interesting because they had a really bad year last year, but this year Cock has kind of gone back to the formula that won them the title in 2014 and the following year as well. Word out to Irving Lozano, who's a Mexican winger that they signed over the summer. He's done really well, scored 7 league goals in 7 league games so far. And I believe Arsenal's head scout was at a few PSV games this season to watch him. He says he wants to stay for a few more years, but yeah, he's going to be big. It kind of looks like Eden Hazard with this kind of dribbling and cutting in and out, but he scores quite a few as well. Moving on to the big game of the weekend, which was the Clásico. I thought it was interesting that both France and the Netherlands had like their big fixtures in the same weekend. Would anyone like to guess the ages of the four starting centre-backs for Feyenoord and Ajax?
17, 19, 8 and 39.
You kind of got there, actually. 21, 21, 18 and 19. So viva la Eredivisie. But yeah, fairly Feyenoord barely had a defence because four of their five options at centre-back are all out injured. So they had to play right-back Kevin Dix at centre-back and midfielder Sofyan Amrabat at right-back. And it didn't show for the first half. They were a bit shaky. It was a very kind of feisty game. Average first half, but the second half really came to life. I think Philippe, last night, did you tweet something about how a nice transfer would be like Neymar going to Ajax?
Yes.
Yeah, but apparently Ajax don't need Neymar because they've got David Neres. Again, Brazilian winger who signed in January was absolutely amazing yesterday. If you can, watch his assist for Kasper Dahlberg's first goal, which was the 2-1 to Ajax. It was absolutely magnificent. But yeah, the first goal was courtesy of a really bad error at the back from Feyenoord. Neres got the ball, passed it to Huntelaar, who's, you know, so as soon as the hunter got a sniff of goal, he was in. There was no doubt it was going to be 1-0. Which puts him actually on par with Johan Cruyff and Marco van Basten in scoring 9 goals in this particular fixture. And yeah, it was a good game for Kasper Dahlberg to get off the mark because they were starting to, you know, some doubts start to creep about whether they should have actually sold him to AS Monaco because they put in a very, very late bid for him of around 50 million euros. So, but it was, he hadn't scored in around 350 minutes this season yet. So it was not a bad game to get your first 2 goals in. And Feyenoord actually got a penalty when Matthijs de Ligt brought down Richiano Haps, but Onana Onana saved the penalty from Jorgensen. And I'd suggest checking out the GIF that Ajax tweeted of Onana. It is. I can't describe it in words. It's magnificent.
Still sounds so wrong.
What?
GIF.
I thought it was GIF.
No, we had GIF.
This before. It is GIF, but really? It shouldn't be.
And what's the thing that cleans the kitchen? SIF.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, okay. That's okay. To keep across these things.
But yeah, Siem De Jong scored, who we might know from being injured all the time at Newcastle, but was also also a really good footballer at Ajax in his first stint at the club. And with Huntelaar and De Jong scoring, it almost seems like 2007 again for Ajax. David Neres was brilliant, really like a stand-up player of the weekend, I'd say. And actually, Ajax tried to reunite him and Richarlison over the summer because they played together for the Brazilian under-20 team. But one phone call from Marco Silva changed everything there.
It's all it needs. Thanks, Priya. Hey, feedback corner and questions. We'll go quickfire because it's been quite a long pod and some people get sad when it goes on too long. Philippe. Harry says, with the change in role of wingers, with pace being more important than crossing, would Beckham have a career if he was a young pro now?
Of course he would.
Thank you. Tom Gavin, if all the players in the Premier League were given a numerical ranking from top to bottom, Barry, who would be 48th?
That's really not fair.
Number 48. Mm. James Milner.
Interesting.
You would have said the same thing for which
he's got his list. I put Laurent Koscielny there, but interesting. Adam, what ratings will Ryan Babel get on Football Manager 2018? 20 for everything, he says.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Okay, perfect.
I Googled Ryan Babel before we came into the studio just to see if he'd done anything over the weekend to merit a mention in this pod.
Guy says, why doesn't Ryan Giggs get a sniff at any half-decent manager's jobs? Is Giggs the new Mike Phelan? I mean, I would potentially say because he hasn't got any experience yet. Anyone else want to add to that?
Because perhaps, I don't know, but just a wild guess, maybe because he doesn't necessarily want to start managing at the kind of level where he should start managing at.
Good point. Queensland just sports fan says, when you, Max and Barry, have a sleepover, is there a pillow fight?
No.
Nah. And Jack says,
you've never been in my house and I've never been in your house.
And that's how it will remain.
Yes.
Feedback corner.
Well, I would say you have invited me to your house.
Did
several
I?
Times. I've never invited you to mine.
Okay.
And that's the way it will stay.
You're so mean, Barry.
Feedback corner. Bob Uppercut says, seriously, stop putting your fiancé in the podcast. It's pathetic. Thanks, Bob Uppercut. And Jeremy says, in the category of very mildly annoying, you end the every podcast with an ad starting, we'll get back to the show in a minute. So that's what you're going to hear in a minute. Barry, hey, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
See you at your place.
No.
Priya, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Philippe.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back on Thursday. What's the lineup? Glenn Denning, Doyle, Burnton. That's velvety, isn't it? See you then.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.